Daddy Mike.
Welcome to another show of Update. You've got Anthony Blomfield and you're tuned into another cool technology show. So everybody, yeah, appreciate you coming on in on time. Isn't that nice? Got my ANT you know what? Gee, I guess you call it. So thanks for coming on, people. Pretty amazing week. Pretty interesting year, isn't it? I felt a little bit of optimism in the last few weeks. It's nice to see. I feel like the New Zealand culture's sort of the psyche's improved, which is really good. I feel people are more vibrant lately. I don't know if you just talk to the average person in the street these days. They feel like people are informed, people are reading, people are updated, people are knowledgeable. So that's good. And this amazing America's Cup has been pretty damn awesome, I think. Hey, pretty cool, fun. Got to give accolades to the Auckland Council, actually. I think they've done an incredible job with the viaduct and getting access for everybody. And of course, can't beat the old Team New Zealand. I think they've done an incredible job as well. So, yeah, hopefully you guys all made it. I had a funny issue. My poor lovely sister tried taking her boat out and it, of course, had a few issues with the outboard, and so we had to get towed. Some nice guy turned out to be my old boss. So, yeah, guys, so interesting week, interesting day. Yeah, we've got lots to talk about in technology, as always. And I'm not sure what else. But, yeah, basically the America's Cup's been a lot of fun. So, what was I going to tell you all? So I'm going to talk a couple of things. I'm going to talk today, actually, about a little bit of tech that's happening in the hardware industry. There is, for the last couple of years, there's been a few advances that during COVID have sort of snuck by us. And so I thought I'd better update you on some computer hardware developments that's been going ahead. And potentially some computer architecture that's happening. And then, maybe a few questions and answers at the end. See how we go. So that's all good. Just going to click this button here. So I can click this here and put this on here. Ah, cool. Here we are. So, yeah, ads. Right. So in the hardware game, people will need to be, while all the crazy things are happening in the world, our friends AMD, which stands for Advanced Micro Devices, I think of them as a European company, really. I might be able to bring out the official head office for that, but I think of it as a European company, Advanced Micro Devices, AMD. They're the competitor to Intel. So I thought I'd tell you a little bit what's been happening with those guys, because it's somewhat interesting in a way. All right. All Right, there we go. So what's been happening with AMD? I think it's quite a bit of fun. Now, basically, if anyone wants to know about the microchip industry, it's a fascinating area. Of course, Intel is what people would recognize as the main manufacturer of microchips. It's your i7 you keep seeing in your Harvey Normans, or your i9 now, thank God. Or your i5, if you still have them, or your Pentium chip, if you go back a bit. Just a little bit of story for that, if that's fun with you guys. History of Intel was effectively, pretty sure I got this right, but the guys who invented the transistor at Bell Labs, one of them went on to start another company. I've forgotten the name, I'll be able to bring it up, but effectively a gymnasium based chip for transistors, and that was in San Francisco, or the Bay Area they call it now, we call it the Silicon Valley. And there was a manufacturer who were basically making little devices to make transistors, with sort of one of the early sort of pioneers of the transistor. But the sort of the gossip was that he was not a good guy to work for. And so the engineers took the sort of designs went to not that far away and set up a factory to make devices which were somewhat similar but better, and that was called Intel. And so Intel's always had an incredible reputation for manufacturing great manufacturing chips. And so that's Intel, goes back a bit, and of course they've been doing incredible well. Now, basically the Intel, not sure who invented it, I came up with it soon, but there was obviously there was sort of IBM, Texas Instruments, and certainly Intel, and they'd come up with a standard of a microprocessor called the x86 instruction set. And just so you know what that means, there's a little bit of background for your hardware, is to program a microchip, or really to run software on a computer, you talk to the central processing unit, right, the microchip, and that's, that's the i7. But to run software, you talk to the CPU in a format that it's hard, it's designed to accept, and that format is called an instruction code, it's sort of like, you can almost think of it as a language it understands. You could think of Intel understanding, let's say, English, and let's say the ARM chips understanding French. They literally understand software in a different way, and these are called instruction sets. Anyway, Intel and IBM and these guys came up with sort of an open standard called the x86 instruction set, and I'm pretty sure that goes back to early 70s. Not sure of the full year that it started, but the x86 was a pretty common system to program. It originally would have been done in machine code, assembly language rather. Well, it's the same thing. Then, years later, what's quite cool about Intel is they just kept on adding new opcodes. And anyway, of course, this x86 was somewhat open. And, of course, AMD, Advanced Microsystems, and I don't know what their origin was, to be fair. They might have even been before Intel. All credit, but I know it's bad. I just don't remember, or haven't learnt the history of AMD. But the AMD certainly got the ability to produce compatible or chips, which also accepted x86. Okay, so for a long time, there was sort of a few manufacturers of these chips. There was certainly IBM, there was, I think even Motorola made an x86 chip. They certainly made a later chips called RISC. But anyway, these chips were made, and AMD got a license, and they got a bloody good reputation for making really smart, intelligent microchips with some different ways of solving problems. And then you had the amazing sort of huge growth of, well, the late 90s was when the science was happening, but us consumers, we really saw the incredible development in the noughties, the 2000s. So what did it look like? So you had sort of Intel was sort of lagging around with a Pentium chip. No one was really that excited when Pentium 2, whoa, Pentium 3, you know. And AMD on the other side of the world, and the other side of the ocean, Atlantic, was making the AMD. And the one that I always remember they came out with was called the Athlon, which was sort of a 500 megahertz processor. And then there was a neck-and-neck race for about 10 years where Intel and AMD were competing with each other. And it was quite good for us consumers because Intel went down a sort of raw power game, which was just faster and faster clock speeds. And then AMD went into the sort of smarter integration, and I'm pretty sure they are the first ones to integrate what's called a graphics kernel or graphics CPU on the chip. And so anyway, that was what was happening in the noughties. And great for us guys, because they were hard going. But then apparently Intel really did get upper hand, and a lot of that was some pretty nasty corruption, quite frankly. You can read about that. But AMD did start to lag behind about 2012, really. AMD started to lag behind. And Intel had the raw power, you know, the i7. But then, of course, Intel went and really innovated hardcore. And they did that almost in secret, in my mind. They didn't get a lot of accolades for it. But they produced, they've been running pretty red hot. And come now, and AMD are now the fastest processors. There you go. And it almost escaped my knowledge. Because, again, you had AMD manufacturing these chips that have the integrated graphics. But then last year, really, 2020, okay, Intel really had 5 years where the i7 was all they could produce, and really i9 is really just another i7 in some ways. So they really haven't actually grown for 5 years, really, in real. You know, they've just made incremental improvements. But AMD have come out with something called the Ryzen chip. And so you think of i7, in my mind, as the industry leader sort of 8-10 years ago. Well, now the Ryzen chip is blowing away the industry. And why is this a big deal? It's because Ryzen has just gone, let's just do this big time. So they've now got a 16-core processor, basically 16 CPUs in one. And it's much more energy efficient. It doesn't take the heating of the Intel chips. I've done this by partnering with, I think it's... oh, who knows? But basically, it's they've got down to a finer nanoparticle and nano diameter of the transistor, and so they've got a sort of 16 CPU or 8 CPU. And I'm pretty sure, I will double check this, the consumer one is now 64 CPUs in one. So Intel's still, you know, the most you really can get is an 8 on their chips. And AMD have also integrated some really smart graphics. So these things fly, these Ryzen chips, and they run cool, not as hot. So that means the Ryzen has blown away the laptop market, which is quite fun because it snuck by because people didn't really follow in last year. But now, if you're out looking for a new laptop, Ryzen guys, I shouldn't be telling that because I want to buy one before the prices go up. But the Ryzen laptops and truth is, I'd wait even wait a bit longer even, because the Ryzen is still fairly new, so you're going to see some improvements. And this is great because, number one, when you have a chip that's cooler, you get a lighter laptop, you less that silly fans, the battery life is longer. And also chips, when they get hot, they slow themselves down. So in a laptop, it is pretty important to get them cold.
So
that's Ryzen, and they're going to be pretty ubiquitous pretty soon. So so it's pretty neat. Now, that's been happening, obviously, with a lot of people still buying the Intels. And again, because the Ryzen's so cold, you're getting silenter laptops, more productivity, really, these multi-core CPUs, because the new software these days is written, it does implement a good job. Yeah, and so that's the cool hardware stuff, guys. Now, the little thing that's come in as a sort of a side to that is the concept that Apple have also innovated in this area completely, and they've left Intel and AMD altogether, which is quite funny. Of course, they've partnered with a company called ARM, and they're making their own chips now, and they call it the Apple Silicon. And it's called the M1. So they've just made, so unlike the i7 and the Ryzen, Apple make their own chip. It's called the M1. Now, this is quite a sort of a fork for the hardware industry in the computers, because depending on what horse you get, you know, it's going to be a bit of a gamble. Sort of, there's three new horses now. Their Ryzen, their new Intel, seeing what they're going to come up with, which is behind, but with their reputation, they'll catch up. But they're definitely behind at the moment in this. And then, of course, Apple's Silica M1 chip. So there's three new horses, and depending on your worldview and what you think, you're going to back one of these. And it's quite fun, and I don't just mean just personally backing one, going, oh, that's what I'm buying. These are things like, what are you going to invest in if you're running a small business? You know, what are you going to buy shares in? Where are you going to, if you're a software developer, what's your primary software development going to be? Is it going to be, you know, tailor-made for these other chips, you know? So, yeah, backing the right horse is quite a big deal. It's pretty interesting. So, it's pretty cool. Now, if you want my opinion on it, because my opinion's always pretty interesting, is there's a few things you need to do. Excuse me, just bring this back up here. Okay, so the Apple one, let's start with that, and let's just see, have a little chat about that. The Apple M1 chip is a tailor-made chip just really to run Apple operating system. It won't run any other operating system. It won't run Linux. It won't run Windows. It won't run outside of Apple. It won't run. In fact, it won't even run Apple's old operating systems, really. In fact, even running Apple software, it has to do what's called emulation. So it's a whole new architecture. It means really there's very few software applications written for it. Now, the advantages. Let me tell you the advantages. It is tailor-made, so it's going to be very efficient. Yeah. So that's going to, if you're an Apple fan, it will be interesting to see if you jump on this horse. I don't think Apple have made the right choice myself. I really don't. I think they haven't made the right choice. And why is because I think Apple's now has relegated itself away from being a computer company. And no longer do I think they're a computer company. I don't think they're a computer. I don't think they can be considered, if I'm really honest, I don't think I wouldn't consider the Apple ecosystem or the Apple laptops a computer. It's a bit of a bold planned thing to say, but I don't think they're a computer. I think they're now an appliance. And I think that is going to be a subtle difference where I think to be a computer company is a much more grandiose relationship with the customer. An appliance company is a very one-way situation. You simply sell a customer a product to do a job, and the relationship's over. And so, you know, because everything's got a computer in it, don't forget. I mean, your Mitsubishi Mazda right now has got a computer in it, right? So if it's just the technicality of a computer, which is a, sort of a software that's running Boolean logic, well, your microwave is a computer. So, you know, obviously to cook an egg, your microwave, you don't have to, you know, download an app and install it. It's very simple. You push, you know, casserole meal. Maybe you put defrost mode on and push level four, right? Now, that's running a software. That's running a computer in your washing machine. In your washing machine, your boots on the kin, it's washing machine. Now, you don't think of, you know, Mitsubishi Black Diamond washing machine as, oh, I'm off to buy a computer. Oh, what's what? Oh, a washing machine computer. People look at you funny. But it is technically a computer. It does a job. And I think there's no relationship with these computers. Your microwave, you don't want to know the operating system. It's the most boring thing to think of in the world. You just want it to do cook the egg, or the washing machine to do clothes, or your Mitsubishi Mazda to start on time and you know, some of these cars, and make sure this is whatever they do, I don't know, self-drive. But then in our minds, they're not considered computers. We think of these as appliances. Okay, I think Apple's left the computer world, dare I say it, a bit sad. I think they're now an appliance company, or if they don't get back on track, I think they've gone down to selling appliances, beautiful appliances, some sophisticated appliances, but just appliances nevertheless. And these appliances will do things for us. So we'll buy a MacBook Air. Okay, it's a nice product. So I think of these as, you know, I mean, they're computers in the strict terminology of a computer. But for me, a computer is a much more grandiose relationship of allowing the user to go somewhere where you don't know they're going to go. It's a sort of a magical instrument to, it's sort of a machine that is not defined what it does. A computer is a machine in all its glory in the user's hand. It can be anything. And I think by Apple just choosing to tailor-made these machines to effectively do tasks that are, we know already that exist, I think they're really just, in my mind, making, yeah, I mean, they're great, but, for example, okay, so, you know, Apple's going to be fantastic with Adobe Photoshop. It's a great service. You'll be able to upload your photos. You're a photographer. You'll be able to blue screen the background and change the resolution. You'll be able to put, you know, masks so you can get a bluer sky. But I mean, that's great, but it does the job out of the box. And no, you know, it's a perfect job, and in many ways, that's what we want sometimes. We don't want to know what it's doing, we just want it to do what it's supposed to do. And in that area, I think if we're going to go down that route, and I actually quite like it, I think we should go the whole way. I think we should have a machine that just does Photoshop. I think we should have a keyboard which is designed for doing photo editing. I think we should use a keyboard to do Photoshop. I think we should use knobs and switches. Think of a sort of a big knob switchboard, if you will, okay? And one is the luminosity, and one is the color saturation, and one is the filter settings, and one is the, let's say you had three videos to mix in Adobe Premiere. I'd have one button called Channel A, Channel B, Channel C. I'd have the luminosity or the opacity. I'd put them into switches on a big keyboard. And I'd actually have a machine. And then you know, there is no real messing around with keyboards. And you go, okay, I'm just going to increase the saturation. That's that knob. Ooh, slide it up, you know. Ooh, slide it up. I'm going to copy and paste. That's just a copy and paste button there. Click, click, click. And I'd make a tailor-made machine. I mean, and I think there will be opportunity for that. I'd also make a tailor-made machine for surfing the internet. There I say it. So it's like, okay, so these are, that's my button called Secure. That's my button called VPN. This slider toggles between all the countries with a VPN. This button here is the, you know, what country IP I'm going for. And this is either news, click, or do I want sports, click. And then three buttons for, you know, filter it down. And I'd make a tailor-made internet surfing device. I'd also do one for AutoCAD. I'd have a huge, big machine that has, you know, like a touch pen or something. But what I'm saying is I got no problem with a machine that is very efficient for solving a problem. And there's lots of things we do. And these machines would be designed for that. And I think, unfortunately, I don't consider them as computers. And I think that's what Apple's missed. And I'm kind of happy that they've missed the boat on this. I think computers are a larger, more pertinent relationship with your customer. They're the computer sold to the user without knowing what the purpose will be. And I think that's the magic. And so while Apple are going to be very good and very efficient and last longer, I don't think they're going to be where the future is for mankind, where we don't know what computers will do, because they are just a tool for imagination. I mean, Steve Jobs' original computer was going to call the bicycle, because the idea is the computer is the bicycle of the mind. It's the same thing you do in your mind, but it just allows you to go further. So, I'm not criticizing Apple. This is just saying that they, I think that they are now, I wouldn't consider them industrious in the liberation of computers. I think they're a very good product, beautiful products. And then, if I'm honest, no disrespect, that's a good product, but I would probably lower my respect for Apple a bit, because I would just rate them again almost in the same line as saying, oh, Apple's a product, you know, Sony's a product, Bang & Olufsen's a product, Panasonic's a product. These are all great products, and then Apple can sort of trade in that product industry of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of electronic products. And then while Apple has a great, I mean, I won't lie, I think consumers will say, yeah, it's nice and shiny, but, you know, there's another product here from, you know, Nokia make a product that does this. There's another product. But on the other side, I think you're going to see AMD and Intel and Motorola and IBM and Google and Facebook, actually, and, you know, even these companies are going to go back to being computer science companies. And what you're going to see is the Intel chip being able to be used for anything we come up with. So maybe we want to run a maybe the around the corner is robots. Say next year there's robots, and say, let's say artificial intelligence has improved, and we get these little machines in the house that really do walk around picking up clothes and doing the dishes. Okay, my poor sister has to do my clothes today, so yeah, she was saying about having a robot at home. So we have these robots, and we're going to be running software on how they can kind of navigate a house and understand what's dirty laundry and stuff. And that software is going to be pretty complicated, but it won't run on these new Apple CPUs, because the CPUs are so complicated and they're so tailor-made for the Apple system that anyone writing robot software will just be like, well, this is just why would we try to navigate our software around a proprietary hardware when we can use an Intel chip, which is a very much open standard and has so many functions, and any function that's not on the i7 or i9 chip, Intel have always been known to simply add that function. So if robots need some sort of new scanner input-output, well, Intel probably have a scanning opcode. But there's normally enough opcodes in the current line of these chips to not need them. So that's what's going to happen around the corner, as Intel will just be used again, but not in the way we think of it. So I think Apple have gone on the wrong course, and I think what we should be doing is definitely sticking with the AMD and the Intel and so forth. Yeah, so that's pretty much where I think, if you want to bet, I would say, yeah, Apple's a good appliance, but I actually think now they're no longer worth the money. I think Ryzen is the most incredible computer you can get these days, and I would look at the Ryzen if you're getting a laptop. They can't be beaten. And I would say, sorry Apple, it's fast and efficient, but actually I want to be involved with a new world. I don't know what's happening with open source software. I don't really want to be stuck with Zoom and Skype. I want 100 myriad peer-to-peer networking things. I don't want to be stuck on Facebook, or I don't want to be stuck on the App Store. I want to be able to use an App Store from the bottom of Zimbabwe to download a new plugin so that I can trade cryptocurrency across some sort of hybrid network that doesn't even use TCP/IP. And that's computer science. It's a big world. And Ryzen and Intel will allow that. But if you go with Ryzen now, you have a pretty amazing machine. And then as far as usability and enjoyability of the computer, then that's when you need to put your Linux on, right? So, I think get your Linux and install it. And my plan was, if I'd ever found people in New Zealand who, I don't know, if I'd found, yeah. Basically, there's an opportunity. I was trying to make a New Zealand distro of Linux for us, but I can never find any people who, most people with computer skills now, all they want to do is run around on a computer and play computer games, which, you know, if there is a God, one day all computer gamers will be going, hey God, how's it going? And God will go, oh, how did it go down there? You know, I gave you everything you want, your great parents, you went to school, and you're paid by the state lunches and schools, and you're given, you know, you're paid for at university, and we gave you a grant, so you went to uni, and, you know, and we built the motorways, your grandparents fought the war, so you had democracy, and we taught you this thing that all the hundreds of years of knowledge of, you know, Alan Turing through the World War One, and Intel made this chip, and we supplied this to you, and you got home, and so now you got this supercomputer in your lounge. So what did you do? Did you save world hunger with some new smart software, or did you fix global transport, or did you write software to do town planning, or did you write a better computer algorithm? What did you do when you're in your 30s, young man? I downloaded a game and went around shooting people that wasn't real. It was just a game. So, yeah. Oh, okay. Oh, that's kind of a waste of making a human, isn't it, really? Really a waste of space, aren't you? But anyway, if people weren't doing that and they went, actually, Anthony, you're right, let me do something in my life, they'd come over to my house and help me make a distro for Linux, which takes a team. But anyway, the distro to use at the moment is something called Arch Linux, Okay. And so the way to do this is you can basically get your laptop, and you get your Ryzen laptop, and download, well, first of all, depends on what's on it, but generally you can copy back up anything that you think's important on there, but generally if you buy a laptop, you won't have anything that important. I would simply get your Windows USB that came with it, or whatever the backup tool they've given you, and I would format the hard drive that came with your laptop, complete format. In fact, what's called a zero. So zero at the hard drive. So there's nothing on the hard drive. I'd burn the partitions. I would format it. This is really the best thing to do when you buy a laptop from Harvey Norman or Snifter Electronics. Format the hard drive completely. Okay. I would then... okay, so that's number one. So number two is then... okay, so then I would create a Linux install. Now, depending on your hardware and what kind of boot system you have, you can either install Windows first or Linux first. But let's go the boring safe route. Okay, so now you've formatted your hard drive. Okay, this is the best way to have a good experience on your computer, on your Ryzen laptop. So you want to... normally, when you get your computer, you would have had a copy of Windows 10 with the laptop. But in reality, you're better to go and download. You probably would have done this earlier, but most people have a copy of Windows 10. So let's assume, let's say you haven't formatted then. Maybe you should just double check in case so for some reason you haven't got a USB of Windows 10 or CD, or you don't have what's called a network boot. So grab a download of a Windows 10 and try to get a corporate edition or professional edition or an education edition. Try to not get a Windows 10, which is the consumer edition. Really don't waste your time with that. Try and get a professional edition of it and download it. Put it onto a USB or even a DVD if you still got access to a burner. Still useful. And then, yeah, sure, format your hard drive, zero it out. So, you know, this is a new laptop. Maybe it's a Sony, who knows. Whatever the brand is, in my experience, you don't want all the spyware and gloatware and silly bits of software they stick with it. That's my experience. So, if it's a really old laptop, you might want to download the drivers with it, but in reality, you can install them later. So now go ahead and install a vanilla copy of your Windows Professional, this vanilla edition, okay? And ideally, you've got the corporate edition of it, all professional. Install it and try to install it on the hard drive with almost everything as minimal as possible. Every time it asks you to, do you want to sign up to Microsoft? I'd say no, no, no. You want to have it as less Microsofty as you can and install it on your hard drive. And the main reason you're doing this is because there'll be some drivers, so your LED keyboard lights up and all that sort of stuff. So once you've done that, install it in, put all your LEDs in and install it all and make it all pretty. Now, next thing, once you've done that, install it and then obviously do what's called an update. Try not to give Microsoft any information. Try to say no, 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 but just get the updates and also get the what's called a driver update so your modem is and your USBs all fast. Right, now that's the last time you really want to use Windows ever again. It's really there as an emergency. For some weird reason, you just got to go back to Windows. But now you're going to basically go to the real operating system. And because you're brave enough to follow me already, you're going to use a Brave version of Linux. And we're not going to be using Ubuntu. There's no point learning Linux by learning on what's supposed to be the easiest version when that easiest version is not going to give you the things that make Linux beautiful. You're better to learn a slightly more advanced version of Linux because you're still learning something new, so you might as well learn, if you're going to learn Linux, well, learn by using one that will be with you for life as a very, very advanced version of Linux. And the name, the formal real technical name is called Arch, A-R-C-H, and the distro that you're going to be using, kids, since we haven't made my New Zealand version, we're going to use one that's international called Mandrake. Okay, so just a sec. We're going to use a Mandrake. There's just a few. Just want to double check that the what version of Mandrake. People put Bing on my computer. Yeah. So, okay, Mandrake Linux. Here we go. I'm just going to get you the URL for this. See, someone hasn't on this computer here. We used to have Google, but now it's Bing. So everything takes just twice as long to search. Oh, who needs productivity, eh, when the country's so wealthy? Bing. Yep. All right, here we go. All right, so I'm going to give you the URL for the version of Linux that you're going to want. And the reason it's going to be this version and is, let me just tell you a little bit. First of all, Arch is a really what's called a package management system. So I'll tell you a little bit about the Linux operating system so you sort of feel comfortable. Number one is you have the kernel, and that's written by really Linux themselves and pretty cool people. Even the original writer of Linux, Linus Torvalds, is the guy that oversees this. And all versions of Linux use this kernel, and it's a very powerful modern kernel. And then on top of that, you have what's called a shell. And you have a package management software. This is kind of the way that Unix interacts with the user interface. And here we go. Now, on top of that, you have what's called the GUI, graphical user interface. Linux allows you to have different graphical user interfaces. They separate it. It's pretty cool. So most operating systems have a GUI. It's very much tied to the operating system. Linux actually has the operating system called Linux, which is just a kernel. It has what's called a distro, which is kind of the smarts. That's packaged software, and that's called a distro. In this case, we're going to be using something called Arch Manjaro, M-A-N-J-R-R-O, and then we're going to be using what's called a KDE Plasma Desktop. It's the best one. All right, and so if you want to go to this website, once you've ready, is manjaro.org, manjaro.org, and this will allow you to get the most advanced version of Linux plus a really great user interface. And so if you want to install this in on your computer over the top of that Windows distribution that you've just installed on your brand new Ryzen laptop, again, I'm going to be sending you out for this. It'll be the last laptop you ever need to buy, and you won't believe me, but it's true. If you buy a Ryzen laptop really this year, and you do what I say about this, the way you're going to put the operating system on, you look after it, it's the rest of your life. It's a 20-year machine. 20 years. Like, whatever, and it's like, yep, this will last you for 20 years. Sure, there'll be faster bingy-bang things, but you'll be too happy with this machine in 20 years because it'll just be reliable. It may not be the flashiest thing that does these different things, but a Ryzen laptop, the way I set it up, it will be your computer. You will not ever sell this one. You will never throw it away. You always keep it. Okay? And the Linux, again, distro is called M-A-N-J-A-R-O, Manjaro. And what they've done is they've actually made a very advanced version of Linux user-friendly. And not quite as user-friendly as Ubuntu, but in some ways it's more user-friendly because it allows you to install in various ways rather than just the way that Ubuntu has you set up. So it's more flexible. That is the Linux. And here we go. All right. So, Manjaro. Now, again, so why is this going to be so advanced? So, first of all, you're going to have Windows there. When you install this new Manjaro Linux, just simply download it, put it on USB, and you're putting it over the top of that previous vanilla version of Windows. Manjaro is smart enough to detect Windows and says, would you like to shrink this partition of Windows? And we'll happily sit alongside your Microsoft boot. And we'll come in halfway, and you get to decide how much of the hard drive you would like us to take over. And I'd pretty much make it about 60 to 70%. And hit burn, hit go, hit install. And the clever thing about this is that with a modern computer, it will allow you to have what's called super fast boot by installing certain drivers into the BIOS, which is really now the flash, or the EEPROM, EFI boot ROM, and it will also allow you the SSD hard drive you have to be partitioned in a way that allows a very fast boot. It will also organize what's called the virtual memory, and so that all your files are really fast, and Windows will look after some of the hardware components, so that's just your physical battery life. And so Manjaro will really, really play nicely. And when you boot it up, you won't get an ugly Windows welcome. You'll get a very nice, polished, which operating system would you like to use today? Windows or Manjaro. So it's a very friendly environment, you know. And while you're doing this, you might as well go into BIOS or your EFI. So when you've first turned it on, just a couple more tips just to help you guys get on your right route, is hit F10 and go into your BIOS. Just make sure all the performance options are on for fast. Try to turn off any security in my mind. I'm not a fan of that in the BIOS. And then also go ahead and make sure you've got NumLock as always on. This is the sort of thing that makes me want to jump off a blooming building. When you get a Microsoft PC, turn it on, and you start typing in some password, you know, happy birthday 123, and you put 123, hit enter. Do it again, 123, enter. Because Microsoft, in their glorious wisdom, always decide that, you know how you have the numbers on your keyboard on the right-hand side? By default, they think it's more likely you want to use those numbers to move around a green screen of the 1980s. So the number 8 is actually upper, the number 2 is down, number 4 is left, and the number 6 is right. And so somehow the brilliant engineers that manufacture these laptops on behalf of Microsoft always make sure that numlock is off. I don't really think that's default human behaviour for using numbers, but so do this once and never have to keep pushing on numlock every time you just simply want to type a couple of numbers, because otherwise you'll endlessly use the numbers at the top of your keyboard or type in some numbers on the right hand side doing something and realise all you've done is move the cursor left and right. So in BIOS, go ahead and change it to numlock on forever, and then maybe smash that with a hammer so that it never ever turns off. It's a metaphorical hammer, by the way. Maybe just do a metaphorical hammer to Microsoft to ask that numlock is on by default. This is not rocket science. Anyway, now you've done that, probably also disable network boot, but it's up to you. Now you've got a good machine that will boot into Windows or this new version of Linux, okay, called, what did I just gave you the name, Manjaro, M-A-N-J-A-R-O. Right, now you have a proper computer. Isn't that amazing? So, in Manjaro is where you're going to really do all your computing from now on. Even though you know Microsoft, you won't need to go back there. Okay, so what's the first thing you're going to do? Okay, so the first thing you're going to do is start downloading all the software you need for your tasks of life. I would suggest you all download a multitude of graphic design tools, Photoshop equivalents. I would also download Office, LibreOffice. I would download your Skype, your Zoom, and all your open source chat tools. I download some 3D tools that are open source, Google's 3D Sketch, also Blender, and any other 3D. I'd also download video editing software, because you never know. Keep it on there, and then you've got that. Now, I know what you're going to ask, so now we've got another step to do so you can have a great life on your Linux system. Now you're going to want to install some Apple, or you're going to install some Microsoft software. But you don't want to have to boot out back to your Windows partition, right? No. So you're going to install a couple of virtual machines in this Linux. So different ways of doing it depending on who you are, but effectively you can use VirtualBox. And you can install VirtualBox and then point it so that it looks at that other partition of your computer, the one you've already got Windows on. So now when you're running Linux and you want to run some funny Microsoft product, you click a button down the bottom and it boots into a virtual machine, and you'll be running actually the other partition of your hard drive, but in another window on Linux, and you'll be able to copy and paste into this. It's a very powerful way to do clever things. I think this is a better way of running Windows, because Windows is now captivated in a window, and you can actually look at the memory allocation. You can look at what's called the PS files. You can look at what files are using your cache. So potentially if you're, for example, using this Windows to do security or different things, or let's say you're downloading software that you're not sure how it has a virus, well, you'll be able to sort of be checking to see how it's navigating and talking to you. It's a really nice way of running Windows in a window on Linux. So that's that one, and I think this is definitely the way to go, guys, is to have 2020. I don't think you need to buy a Ryzen laptop this year, guys, but just let you know, I really wouldn't buy a Mac any more Kiwis. And I worked for them. I was an Apple fan. I'm a big fan of them. I think Apple are no longer a computer company. And I think this is the philosophy that's been lost in this modern world. But I think Apple now a money-making company. So I don't think Apple are really pushing the ability of mankind to use industrious computer science. I think they're saying we've found a way of making huge amounts of cash, and the way we do that is by selling these machines that we know make cash. And I think that's I think too many companies miss that point, that there is this somehow slipped in, obviously, that a primary operation of a company is to make money. I don't think even the people that say that, who are intelligent, have really thought that through. There is no such thing as money, people. There is no such thing. I don't know why that's so hard to understand. There is this thing called wealth. Wealth. So if you want to make wealth, you generally create goods and services that create a better quality of living for all. So those people who you've made a better quality of living are then able to make a better quality of living for you. I'm sort of embarrassed I have to be telling the human race these things. But give an example. Let's say Apple made a proficient machine that made doctors and nurses more able to be proficient with their work and less stress when they got home. And therefore they were able to apply their practice of medicine more diligently. And then staff that worked for Apple one day needed a nurse, and the product that they'd sold the nurse to look up medicines online were now able to be used to help the staff of Apple to get a better broken arm fixed, so that the broken arm fixed could go to his best cafe. This is called wealth creation. I know that I don't belong on planet Earth because I'm blessed with a few brain cells, but Apple, I don't think, really interested in pushing a greater level of deep computer science and liberation. I think Tim Cook and their board of directors now just simply say, what is the best way to make money out of what we know makes money? And I think, therefore, I wouldn't be supporting Apple New Zealand. I would be supporting Ryzen laptops, which are much more open source, or Intel, and I would be installing Linux, which give you a much better graphical user interface and also much more interesting software. So that's really what my tip is, guys, for 2021. Get a Ryzen laptop or wait till next year. There is no rush on the Ryzens. In fact, 2022 might even be a better year. I think you'll be really thankful for me you go down this route. And these laptops will be, yeah, pretty reliable. And lastly, just before I sneak off, if you really want to, the Ryzen laptops, you can run your own version of Apple operating system on them as well. It's not illegal, according to Apple. It's just illegal if you sell that product as an Apple. But for personal use, if you get a copy, if you legally own a copy of the Apple operating system, then there's no law that stops you from installing that, on a Ryzen laptop. So if you're really a hard fan of the way that Safari looks on your taskbar, you can run an actual copy of the Apple operating system. You won't be arrested. And if you really want to go a step further, run that in a virtual machine. All right. We'll be right back.